great and rain is more or less guaranteed to happen. But it's not like super, super horrible. I mean, if you look at that,
there's so much to do, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's UK. It's not going to be like blazing hot, but there's not like torrential rain either. So it should be all right. Anyway, we're live, everybody. We're live. So welcome to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 119, bringing it to you every Friday. No fail. And we've got a superb show for you today, something I'm really excited about. It never gets boring. You know, how do we interact with people better? How do we build relationships in such a way that people don't hate us? I mean, recruiters have this problem. Residually, we have this issue. Nobody wants to talk to us. How do we actually make it so not only our contact is effective, but actually welcome? You know, people might actually welcome having interactions with us, particularly those that are hard to hire. And we're speaking today specifically about software engineers. So we're very excited today to host that show and bring in some really cool guests who are, in my book, some of the best experts at doing this task. You know, they've got some unique techniques in terms of building connections with software engineers, and I think we could all really learn from them. So it's going to be fantastic. Anyway, let's do a quick sound check as we usually do. I've changed a few things around in the background, so I actually don't know what works or doesn't. I think I should be live on Crowdcast, hopefully. So if you can hear me on Crowdcast, let me know. Just give me a comment on the sidebar there, say you can hear me okay. We are multicasting on LinkedIn, folks. So yes, I think I'm live. So give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down, or yes, Hung, that was an insightful comment. That was one of the emojis you can get. Yes, Hung, insightful. Let me know if you can hear me okay. That'd be cool. We are also on Facebook. I think that should be okay. I don't know whether that's true, but we should be broadcasting there. I don't think we are. Fuck it. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. Scratch the profanity. But yeah, we're live there somewhere. And we may even be back on Periscope. I think should have died, but I believe we might be back on. So let me know if you can hear me okay in all of those places. That would be good to know. Okay, we're getting a few people saying they can hear me okay, so that's fine. All right, excellent. Good stuff. Let's go to say a quick word to our sponsors, actually. Thank you for sponsoring this episode from TripleByte. TripleByte are a software platform that helps you hire software engineers. And they've actually been a really interesting business for a little while. One of the era of matching services that I think have really emerged from that huge gamut of businesses that I was part of at one point. But these guys have moved it further forward. They're now called TripleByte Screen, which is very interesting. And you should try their software because they're going to give it away for free. Apparently, you can try. They've done a little bit of like repositioning in terms of what they do. And one of their offers is, listen, you can actually try this software with no cost. So if you're hiring for software engineers, which I dare say if you're watching this show, you might want to check these guys out if you haven't tried them already. I've just shared it in the chat stream. So make sure you avail yourself to that. Okay, let's get on with it. Adam Gordon, welcome back to the show. Good to see you, man. How are you? Are you okay?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me. I'm blessed as always.
Cool. And it's good that you're getting good feedback on your attire and your skin tone. That's always welcome.
I got some feedback from my wife the other day, which was about the beard. She basically went, you know, you're basically becoming Bill Burman.
Well, we love Bill, but I don't think it's a good idea for anybody to aspire to be the second one of Bill. So yes, your wife might have a point there, but it suits you quite well. I think the beard, you know, works. You got to keep it in trim and stuff, but I think it works quite well. In fact, most people suit beards. I haven't seen anybody that looks terrible with facial hair. So I think blokes generally look better with hair, I think.
However, I've seen plenty of people that look terrible without a beard. So
absolutely correct. Is that true, folks? I mean, is beard generally better, like unanimously among men? I think it is, and ultimately it has an impact because we're now all like, you know, all video zooming. We're all like doing all our communication this way. I think if it gives some like positive impact in some way, then maybe you got to think about, you know, changing your appearance in some way. If you can grow a beard, you know, you might as well give it a shot.
Of the women in my life, none of them like this beard. And so, you know, that's a 100%, you know, negative.
But this is mainly your wife, right? She married you.
No, my aunt, my gran, she didn't like it either. My mom didn't like it. Mm.
I think that's all right, because that's not the type of person you want to
appeal to.
You don't really care about, right? I mean, you want to care about people you don't know you at all, don't have a relationship with you, never seen you grow up. You know, you're dealing with business people and all this type of stuff. I've never seen young Adam. They're the people that, you know, their opinions you should care about more.
At some point, there's a point in your age where you want to look older, right? And facial hair like this makes you look older. And then it's probably a point that happens when you want to look younger. I don't know what age that is. Maybe about 50, something like that.
I don't think we ever go back, because what happens is your face will start shrinking. So as a human being, as you get older, you get smaller and kind of weaker and all this type of stuff. So you want to keep on projecting power. And to do that, I think you keep growing a beard. You know what I mean? That's
like Yevgeny Lebedev, the guy who owns the Evening Standard. Have you seen his beard? That's a proper power play, that guy.
I've not seen it. Share the link in.
It's like velvet.
Is it going completely too far? But anyway, I don't even know why we're talking about beards. This is probably not the not the topic people signed up for. But anyway, beards. I think they're important, particularly for Zooms. Anyway, moving on very quickly. Brain Food Man, did you read it last week? If you did, tell me what was interesting.
Yeah, I did. Lots of things. I mean, the first one, you know, you saw I liked it on Twitter, was your review of, like, if you're recruiting in China, here's the things you need to know about. Some of those things I knew, some of them, I probably knew about three of the, like, 10 things or whatever it was. The one that I found the most interesting was about the, I don't know how to pronounce it, Hukou?
The Hukou system, yeah.
Right, this internal migration system, which doesn't exactly mean that you can't move to other places, but it ties you with almost like a passport to internal services like education and healthcare and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, in the UK, certainly people are kicking off about having like COVID passports in order to enter a nightclub and stuff like that. Could you imagine if the Hukou system was in the UK? It wouldn't really work very well. So I think that was interesting.
Brexit Britain would love it, mate. It's all about constraining freedom of movement. It's like saying you can't rock up to another town and get access to their services because the budgets of the town is paid by the budget of the town. It's actually something the US is maybe has a problem with this, because the US, obviously, 52 states, the freedom of movement throughout the states, you can just rock up and go. What ends up happening is that the Sunshine States, California, for instance, I think has 50% of the homeless population in the US. And that's a lot because of the internal migration. People like going to a warmer place. There's better social services out there. There's more money from the citizens out there. So in some respects, you know, a lot of the other states are like, you know, sending the homeless over there. You know, here's a one-way ticket. Go to San Diego, live there. And suddenly you're in San Diego, you inherit that problem, you've got to deal with it. So very, very difficult. You know, internal migration, external migration, movement of people generally, that's going to be such a big topic, you know, from here on forward. You know, you look at climate change and where you're at. Goodness me, this is one of the big challenges that we've got to deal with as a species, right? So I think how many places that we currently live in are going to be uninhabitable in 100 years or so, even less sometimes. That's a big concern. So yeah, there we go. Anyway,
another one, which probably unless you're like a job board or sort of recruitment marketing geek, you probably wouldn't know about this, but Google for Jobs has announced that it's like back in action. It's like a sleeping giant that kind of opens up the cave and like breathes out some fire occasionally. Well, it just breathes out some fire, and that fire is potentially going to be very, very big news for a lot of job boards, especially aggregators. I mean, Indeed's response to this is going to be very interesting. But effectively, they're changing the way that traffic is going to be delivered to jobs on the internet, on Google or Chrome. And it's basically an attempt to get rid of spam, get rid of duplicate jobs, get rid of old jobs, out-of-date things. You can't really cut and paste. It's going to stop you doing that. And then direct apply is a major feature of this. So if your job ad takes you to some other page that gets you to do something and then to another one, and it makes you jump through hoops in order to actually apply, no traffic for you, as Chad Sowash said on the Chad and Cheese podcast the other day. So yeah. Well worth taking. If you're in recruitment marketing, you need to know what this means. And I absolutely, Stephen's summary on the College Recruiter blog is really great. Layman's terms. Anybody in recruitment is going to read that and go, right, okay, I know what that means.
Yeah. I would say, you're absolutely right about where Google for Jobs is. Like, it comes out now and again. It kind of freaks everyone out and then disappears. No one cares about it. But they do have such power to direct traffic to your job. So I think this is relevant for anybody with a career site. Anybody who, you know, if you're getting traffic in your career site, you kind of need to be aware as to what Google are doing. And they're basically trying to, the main thing with Google for Jobs is they're trying to reduce duplication. And they're trying to make it easy for the applicant to apply directly where they find the job, which may be Google. So you've got to basically arrange your data schema in such a way that is compliant with Google for Jobs. Anyway, you should check it out. There's loads of links about it, but the two links I've just shared there, Steve Rothberg wrote a very accessible post on it. And as you say, Chad and Cheese had a very good podcast on it as well. We probably should do a Google for Jobs show on it. I don't know whether that's interesting. It's not mega interesting for me, to be honest, from a stimulation point of view, but we probably need to do it for the sake of the community, really.
I'm broadening it out so that it's about like how does the internet distribute traffic for your job ads, you know, that type of thing. Might, you know, broadening out a little bit from Google for Jobs might be pretty widespread appeal, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. If we pitch it as, look, here's recruitment marketing, what you need to do with your career site, then Google for Jobs might actually make an appearance there. Again, yeah, we should do one of those going forward. Okay, one more before we move on to topic, man.
Only one. Okay, so. That one is, the balance of power. The balance of power in recruitment is really interesting. It shifts from one place to the other place, from employer to candidate or from candidate to employer, largely depending on just general economic cycles. But of course, we've got a really unusual circumstance right now where people are not going from one job to another. And skills in like what I call in-demand talent are in more demand than they ever have been because of the speed at which technology and engineering and healthcare is all developing. And that gives us the scenario where you can like get software engineers who write blogs, which are things like 20 questions that a software engineer needs to ask when they're thinking about moving to another team. Now, I wasn't quite sure whether this was about moving to another company or whether it was about moving from one team into another team within the same company. But I mean, like, we've all seen these job application processes where you've got to do duplicates and there's like, you know, 50 questions before you get to actually attach your CV and stuff like that. Well, software engineers, some at least, want to make it the other way around. And here's the 20 questions that you need the employer to fill in or the team manager to fill in. And satisfy you with. They need to roll out the red carpet. Here's everything you should get. So
you know what, that post, I think it was purely for like a developer moving teams or whatever. It wasn't job related per se, but I think that it was a really useful tool for tech recruiters to take to intake meetings, because you can imagine, especially if you're new to your job, you don't quite know it, and you know, you just accept what the hiring manager starts spitting at you, saying you need to have this, this, and this, but it might not actually contain the information that an engineer wants to hear. So Overall, he's asking for things that are going to be relevant to the job itself. You know, what is the deployment sort of process? What is the environment in terms of the operating environment going to be like in terms of technology? Like, who do you interface with? All of that is going to be super relevant. So anyway, that's good stuff. Let's go on to this topic a little bit, Adam. We'll dive into it. Again, I'm going to say you don't know too much about software engineers in particular. However, you do know something about building social capital. So how would you, so this idea that, you know what, we're doing a lot of clever things with, you know, writing clever emails, and we're doing like, you know, funny GIFs on emails and stuff like that. It's just trying to spark something. But all of that is gimmickry. Isn't there a better way to kind of just to build some credibility with this audience so that they're happy to speak to you? What are your thoughts on that? How do you build credibility with kind of an audience that might be skeptical as to your motive and, you know, not very, you know, basically defensive towards your approach?
Well, I mean, there's two biggest problems for me in recruitment are, number one, the way that we reach out to people cold and basically offer them the opportunity to interview for a job without really knowing anything much about them. We're still doing far too much cold contact and just like ephemeral relationships where every 2 months I'll message somebody, hey, what about this job? What about this job? What about this job? What we're not really doing, which mainstream marketing does much, much better, is a warm-up process. So, you know, when you think about in-demand talent like software engineers, most of them are not in the market. They don't care about your job adverts. They don't care about your employer brand, right? This is all what I call point of sale material, which is designed for the people that are either in the market looking for a job, or you've managed to bring them through a pipeline to the point where they are actually considering it. And 90% of our recruitment marketing focus is for like 1% of the actual audience we're trying to talk to. So building social capital needs to include the understanding that most people are cold, they don't care. But what they do care about is skills, insights, things that will help them be better at their jobs and be better in their lives. And if you can be useful and relevant, then you've got an opportunity to take that relationship a bit further. If you don't start in a place where I'm going to be useful and relevant and lead with value, you got very, very little chance, and you got a life of cold calling ahead of you.
All right, that's actually a key insight, Adam. I'm stunned that you've added value to this conversation. I'm joking.
How about you get insulted every week?
That's your job.
Stockholm syndrome.
That's your job. No, but it's actually really important because job seeking is episodic, meaning that you're only really interested. You're only doing it like you're not doing it all the time. You're only doing it when you need to, really. So if all recruiters are doing is talking job specific content, you're bouncing off them. Of course, they're not going to be interested. In fact, they're just going to be annoyed because you've just interrupted them in some way. I've got a person right now who's like, he's got me on a drip campaign. He's trying to sell me some property stuff. Like, I've never signed up for any property stuff. Like, how does he even, he has no idea whether I'm interested at all in his services or when it is. He's literally got me off a database somewhere and just hammered me with it.
Are you interested then?
No, like, I have no idea how I appeared here. I'm pretty around publicly. So I think data's just been piped into a database, and here I go. So it's like, okay, how much of recruiting is actually a way we're misunderstanding how interesting recruiting or jobs are for this audience that is in high demand, therefore not always looking, very rarely looking actually. How do we build a relationship? We need to not be asking for decisions at this point. We need to build relationships. So anyway, let's bring on our guests. I think we've got lots of interesting people to speak with. I'm going to try and bring them all at once. This may be our new format, actually. So let's see whether we can get it all together. So we're going to bring on Vim Damans, Alla Pavlova. Hopefully she is here. And I believe Ivan Galenko is here also. So let's just try this and see whether we can get these folks on board. There's Vim.
Hello. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, perfect, Vim. Nice to see you, sir. So, Vim, as we've got you here first, can you quickly introduce yourself, like who you are and what it is you do?
I'm Wim. I'm a recruiter from Belgium and the Netherlands right now. I'm just another recruiter. That says so on my LinkedIn, so it must be true. I've been recruiting in IT and tech for like the last 10 years. And you can find me just about anywhere on most of the recruitment platforms.
Fantastic. And most of the audience, I'm sure, would know Wim. He's been a really great contributor to the tech sourcing community in particular. So great to see you there. And there's Ivan as well. Great to see you, Ivan. Quickly, can you introduce yourself, who you are, and what it is you do?
I worked for several years as a software developer and then started my small recruitment firm. And now I basically build tools for recruitment and also make it accessible to other recruiters focused on tech recruitment, but that's what I do at the moment. So I engage with software engineers from every angle, basically. So I have been one, and now, like, basically I'm taking care of recruitment in that sector a lot.
Fantastic. Go ahead.
If a tool works for like technology recruitment, it's going to have a field day anywhere else. So it's a great place to start, because if you crack that, everybody else is going to want it.
Do you think so? Because the technical people they have the most stuff online. So kind of in a way, it's like the easiest to build tools for them, because you can like access GitHub, their blogs, their whatever. So they have the biggest online presence, almost, I would say. So in a way, it's actually easier, maybe. It can be immediately transferred?
Because if you think about a typical recruiter, they're spending their time on LinkedIn, and that's probably where software engineers spend the least time. They possibly don't even have profiles there. So the content that's accessible that you're talking about, that's accessible to either highly skilled tech recruiters or people like yourself that have been software engineers, but your average recruiter can't access that information. And the second reason is because tech people are in such high demand that actually responding to your message is, you know, much more of a rare kind of thing for them to do than it is for people in finance or marketing or HR or, you know, other business disciplines. So you might be able to find them, but getting them to talk to you is a little bit harder.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, okay. Well, we've finally got Ala on to join us as well. Sorry for those tech issues, Ala. Great to see you again. For the people who don't know you, can you quickly intro yourself?
Hey, everyone. Yeah, my name is Ala. I'm a tech recruiter right now in two companies. So moving in between, I'm here at Riot Games. I'm based in the Netherlands. And I'm very excited to share some stories. Please remind me to share a story about the airport. So small teaser.
Okay. Wow. This sounds exciting. We might have to go there straight away, but let's before we do that, let's just go and do a quick round robin on this. So the idea behind this show is to say, you know what, we're trying a lot of gimmicks, it seems to me, to try and get developers to interact with us in some way. And over time, even though that may be effective, like in small doses, it just gets annoying and become cliche very, very soon, doesn't it? I'm just thinking, you know what, isn't there a way in which we could actually build some credibility with the community so that, you know, they recognize who you are, you know, they know this is how you work and all this kind of stuff, and they're more happy to actually have a conversation with you particularly rather than just, you know, respond to some crappy joke that's been sent on an email or whatnot. Let's go to you first on this, Wim. Your approach to this, your mental state when you're talking or building a relationship with the engineering community, how do you go about doing this? What's your advice be to, let's say, a young recruiter just getting into tech recruiting for the first time?
I tend to go from my expertise, and I am an IT recruiter. My expertise is the recruitment. It's not, well, it is also the IT part, but if at any point I am better in the IT part than the people that I'm hiring, I should just work the IT job and not be a recruiter. So my expertise there is being a recruiter. And once you go into those communities and you help people from your expertise being recruitment, and you can go like, hey, have you thought about this? Or maybe I can review your CV. Or in my experience as a recruiter, this and this and this has happened before. Then you're adding value to whatever community you get into in whatever field you work. And from there, people are going to recognize you as, oh, yeah, he's that recruiter, but he's okay because he helped out other people on this platform with their questions.
So that's a really interesting insight, because I think a lot of the reasons why recruiters make this mistake is that they feel like they need to know everything about the tech and have this deep technical knowledge. And without that, you can't have a conversation. But what you're saying is, hey, of course you need to respect the discipline of technology, but your expertise is not that. So don't pretend that that's the case. Where your expertise is something that developers definitely don't know anything about, which is how recruiting works. Because it's often a very opaque system. You know, you look at a lot of the criticisms that engineers have of recruiting, and oftentimes it's through very bad experience and it's justified annoyance. But their attribution as to the reason why they've had that experience is often incorrect. They would attribute to a thing, and us recruiters looking at that, and actually the reason why you've had a bad experience is through this reason, because of this component of the process hasn't worked out, and they don't know that. So educating them on recruiting could be the first thing we think about. Okay, great stuff.
I can give you a little bit of context that adds a bit more to this. So From my customers and their sort of A/B testing of candidate outreach, what they find across the board is that when they're trying to talk to people who are cold and are not necessarily looking for a job today, they get far less response when the outreach is going from a recruiter than they do when the response is going from somebody that's a software engineer in the team or is the CTO or something like that. However, when the person is in the market looking for a job and they've got to the point where they're looking at job descriptions and things like that, they're much more likely to respond to an email that's been sent to them from somebody with a recruiter title than somebody who's like in that team, because they can ask the recruiter the exact questions around what's it really like to work here, and they feel like that person's going to be able to give them more info. You know, they're the expert around what's it like to work here, what's the recruitment process like, all that sort of thing. And they can be vulnerable with that person, whereas they probably can't with the hiring manager.
That's a really good insight again, Adam. Adding value, this is turning into quite a thrilling show for me.
Do you remember if this was like just tech recruitment or any kind of recruitment?
I'm talking about tech recruitment specifically, but we've seen it applied in engineering and healthcare as well.
I think the idea here that the candidate may be more comfortable speaking to the recruiter than, let's say, your potential hiring manager makes sense. But particularly if you're very interested in looking for work, you might want to know about the salary. You want to know about the career progression. You want to know about all those insight stuff. And when you get to the hiring manager, that's when you ideally want to be equipped already with that information, rather than have to have, oh, by the way, how much is this paying? You know, that you don't want to give that impression. I totally get it. Okay, let's go to you on this, Ala. In terms of, you know, your approach, your mindset when it comes down to building relationships with the hard to hire, how do you do that? In fact, this is very pertinent to you because you've just moved to a new kind of space to a degree, right? You've moved from like normal engineering, so to speak, now to game development and stuff like this, quite a new space. So this is actually a very current challenge for you. How are you going about doing this? Both, you know, before and now?
All good questions. About the approach, I would say I never look at the recruitment as a sales. I look at the recruitment as a customer support or customer service. So I can't imagine myself like poking the stranger in the street and say, hey, want a job? So I would probably come to the stranger, say, hey, my name is Ala, I'm doing these kind of things. For some reason, could this, any of this could be interesting for you? Or so starting with why you approaching this person, it's basics, but I think if every recruiter is going to do that, it's going to make our reputation much better. We should, in a way, also accept our mistakes. So we do sometimes mistakes with names, with technologies, with anything. But I think when you apologize honestly about it, and when you're not pretending, so that's going to build a good relationship. Sometimes you can laugh after a nice mistake you made with something. So that would be the approach that I would follow myself. And before ask anything, try to give something. I would suggest that, okay, look at this person's career. So is this person is going to benefit from this job? Is it going to be next step forward? Is it going to be just about a team? So I will try to guess what could make this life of this person more exciting if he or she is going to join this company. And about changing environments, yes, it's true. So Singapore, Hong Kong, different areas for me in terms of the sourcing. But I am a gamer myself, and I just ask other gamers, hey, where are you guys posting your codes? Where are you looking for news in IT? So where you can be expected to be contacted, and where I should not go? Like, you know, for example, I was really personally offended when I received a message on Spotify, let's say. I don't want to receive messages in there. So be relevant, to be in the right place, the right time, and always why.
You know what, Ale, whenever you say anything, you always come on the show, and I'm always like wanting to make notes every time you speak, because you've just said like three or four things I think are really, really important. Firstly, I'd like to just touch on this idea that if you make a mistake, that's actually a great opportunity for engagement. I've discovered this myself as a persistent mistake maker. You know, I've had to get used to the idea, oh shit, you've made that mistake, like I've just done now, profanity, apologies. But you can go ahead and actually recover the relationship by putting together some sort of apology or just an explanation as to how that happened. Sometimes that's sufficient. That could be relationship building. A couple more things that you mentioned, but we don't want to dwell on it too much right now. We'll come back to it, like what the channel selection is. I think that's super important. Oftentimes, recruiters are very good at finding developers or finding anybody, really. That's our job. A great deal, we identify where they are. And oftentimes, the advice is, oh, speak to them where you find them. And I think there's a caveat with that advice. That's not always the case. Like, for instance, if I find somebody on Spotify, let's say, is it the appropriate place to message them right there and then? Debatable. So we'll go into that a bit later. But quickly to you, Ivan, how do you go about building relationships with software engineers? Love to get your view.
So first, totally agree with basically what you just said. I mean, Ala and all you of you, because basically, especially this being relevant from the very beginning, yeah. So if you see something on the LinkedIn profile of a person, then if you very specifically, for example, compliment them that, hey, this stands out, that makes a recruiter believe you're like a good software engineer. For example, somebody mentions solid principles. I had that today, by the way, for example. And immediately you can say, hey, like, I like that you really have it at the top because that tells me you're a good software engineer. So at the same time, you educate them like what is important on the resume, on the like talk in the interview, all these things. So I agree that like here, the potential impact you can make as a recruiter without having technical knowledge is the biggest, because like probably programmers are the number one candidates that have no clue how recruiting works and all these small details and edge cases and exceptions and common things that is very normal in recruiting and business. Programmers have no clue, zero clue. So like our job is to educate them on all these things. Yeah. At the same time, I believe that a little bit of technical knowledge really makes you stand out. I've met really absolutely non-technical people that just learned tech terms and they engaged in a meetup, in a conference with a group of programmers. I didn't notice for like 1 hour that this person is actually not a developer. So it can be very impressive. But yes, the education about like recruiting, making a better, like getting a better salary offer, those things that really are impactful to the person, they will stay in the person's mind for many years. And this is how you get the recommendations of them.
Did you get that, folks? That was really, really insightful observation. Like commentate on their marketability. Right. So you've encountered them somewhere. You've encountered them on LinkedIn, you on GitHub or whatever, their website, something. But then you kind of say, explain how you found this person and explain why you're approaching them. And you can say, hey, this is the reason why, is because this makes you stand out from the other people I wanted to speak to. You're the first person I wanted to speak to because you've said this or you've committed that or you've done this. And I think that's got to be welcome information for the developer, because as you know, you're, as he does, he or she doesn't know, the recruiter is almost the sounding board from the market point of view. You know, they want to know where everyone wants to know whether they're marketable and valuable. So if you're able to observe that and give commentary on it, that's a winning ticket. Very, very good. Okay.
Can I ask a question about something that's been occurring to me over the last, based on what Ivan was just saying there. a lot of like software engineers are very sort of, or tech people are very left brain type people, and a lot of recruiters, of course, are very right brain type people. So sometimes that mixes like oil and water, as in it doesn't mix. I wonder whether do we as recruiters need to really adapt our style in terms of like the way we present ourselves, the way we write things. Do we need to be more to the point, or do we need to adapt our persona in some way?
I'm going to go with it straight away. Bottom line up front is very, very important. I think you should literally stay, and I think this is true for anybody. Our tolerance for time wasting is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. All of us are, right? All of us are. Doesn't matter where we're at. We're getting bombarded by stuff. The last thing I want is an ambiguous message or an ambiguous ask from somebody that I've got to plow through a load of copy before I figure out what the person wants. So please tell me right up front what this is about, and then I can make an assessment whether it's right or wrong to deal with. I mean, that's my own approach, right? That's my own attitude to inbound, but I'm not sure whether that is reflective to the market, but I just felt I needed to share that because, when you're mega busy or you're mega getting a lot of inbound, you can't process every single bit of copy with the due respect that maybe it deserves, you know?
Anybody else got any thoughts about that?
I mean, I'm more left-brain myself, so but I noticed that most of it makes it easy to connect to developers for me, because if once you get into those memes, into those GIFs, you start understanding what they're talking about, you can just start messaging them on the whole. So, but I think like short and sweet most of the time is the best for contacting developers and IT people, because they're already getting bombarded. They're already getting too much messages. They do not want to spend 15 minutes on a phone before they know, oh, you have a vacancy for me. No, they want to know like, look, this is the vacancy. Here's what we're looking for. This is why I think you're good for this. Do you agree? And can we make something happen out of this? Could this be interesting for you? And then I think like short and sweet and getting to the point as fast as possible, instead of spending 30 minutes messaging back and forth about how great their profile, like they're going to get bored and you're going to lose people.
Yeah. On the other hand, it's really what makes tech recruitment hard is that the variance is so high. I had people, answering me, why are you sending me just such a short message? I want to have the whole information blocked. So you never know, like, what the person really like wants. Yeah, so you have the variety, in my opinion, is in the developer field, it's like the highest. You have very, like, to be honest, terrible people. I have situation, send me the job description. I'm like, okay, I have it in my head. I don't have it written down. Literally, the client said, okay, you search for this. Okay. And then like, no, you give it to me written. I'm like, okay, but I would like to have a phone call, because then I can explain the thing that no, you send it written. Okay. Then I sit down, like I really write the job post, send it to them. And then like one day later, like, have you read it? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, you are like bombarding me with messages, blocked. I mean, what can you say to? I mean, this is like normal life in tech recruitment. Yeah. On the other extreme end, you have the nicest people. They are like really, I have to protect them from the client, because like, they will like make them a bad offer or something. I really have to like babysit them through the whole process. And the nicest people in the world, and really like only want good things for you and the client and everyone. Yeah. It's such a, like, I think with other roles, like sales, it's more like you have like, everyone is sort of a good communicator and knows how business works, and this makes it more like mainstream. Whereas with developers, the variance is just huge, which kind of people you meet.
That's
But it very much reminds me of if you're in a sales job and you're reaching out to try and sell something to like HR directors or marketing directors or people like that, probably technology directors. I mean, you can get a massive variance in responses back from them as well. And that's because they feel like they've got power, because they're the ones in demand. And in the case of this, trying to recruit tech people, they know that they are the ones with the power and they're in demand. If you're hiring people who are in much more, ready supply, they probably don't act like that quite as often.
Is it too awkward to is it too weird to have a prior conversation as to how the conversation should take place? You know, this, you know, it's trying to identify how this person likes to interact. Would that be too weird to do?
I mean, you could use Crystal for that, couldn't you? Crystalknows.com. You can go and take a look, right? Okay, I want to contact Ivan. What you know, and it'll return back for me. Well, Ivan's going to prefer that you communicate with look, three bullet points, no more. You know, or Vim's going to want you to write in paragraphs and give you all the information. So yeah, there's things that are out there that can help you with that.
You can actually sometimes see in the summary recommendations for recruiters how to approach the person. Like, hey, don't write me this, don't write me that, don't approach me for that. It's like, you know, yeah. Reminds me Uber comfort. So I would like no conversations and I would like cold temperature. So I think that's the beauty of us working in IT and being a tech recruiter. Things are changing all the time. So I remember the times when JavaScript was only for front-end development. Now, okay, so it's for both. So and this is good. So that's why we A/B testing everything. I'm sending out super personal, amazing messages, but the same. I've got like, hey, it's not relevant for me. Bye. Have you checked my profile? Yes, I did actually. I spent like 10 minutes at least crafting it and 20 minutes looking for it and et cetera. So I personally say that adapting is great, but still we recruiters can bring a lot of other things. As everyone mentioned in this panel, like we can prepare, we can help them, and we can set them for success. This is very important. So we can ask them, hey, what do you think we from our side can do, and also tell them what actually we are here doing together.
You know, it's very interesting about the variants. I want to just sit on this idea just a little bit, because a lot of people reading this or listening to this would swear down, hey, you need to personally craft every email or every message with very deep research and, you know, spend, you know, literally have a deep dive and craft it absolutely personally. And then there's other people, I think Ala and Ivan, you've just kind of indicated that sometimes you can do that, but you can still get a negative response, because actually it really depends on the person and even in the moment of that person's mind. I mean, it could just be you've caught that individual on a bad day and they will respond in this way no matter how good the message is. So as a recruiter, you're spending a lot of time that's going to be wasted. So what is the right approach to this? Is there no solution? I'm now beginning to understand why we do crank the mass message. And, all right, send it out to 100 people. I'm going to get two of them. 98 are going to be annoyed, but you know what? I've got two people coming back. Like, what other options do we have?
I always say template the things that you can template, and then like personalize the things you need to personalize. Like the company that you're working for, you only have like three, maybe four different ways you can explain what that company does. And that's something that you're going to template. And like the other things, like the things why you think this person is important, why this, like they get so many messages. Like if you're not going to get some form of connection with them and show that, hey, I am not like those 20 other people that have sent you a spam message today, you're going to end up with all the other spam messages because you are spamming. I mean,
so didn't I read somewhere that you need to put three elements of customization in an email? That's the optimal. Isn't this marketing where you've got to put at least three indicators in the copy to show that you've done some research on the person, and that increases your response rate because at least, you know, you've put energy in and the expectation is you might get some energy back. Do you subscribe to that view? And Adam, I'll throw you back into this as a potential person to respond to this. But all four of you, what are your thoughts on the amount of personalization that is reasonable for a recruiter to do?
I've read that research. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Adam. I saw you.
No, it's fine.
I've read that research. I think it's probably correct, but it's also what like personalization do you put in it? If you go like, hey, you are job title at company, and then repeat that three times, that's it's not going to give that much benefit, because people can automate that. Like people have automated exactly that. And it's that fake personalization that you show. But you instead, if you go like, hey, this looks interesting because I see that you've worked at that company and you've done something the same or maybe at a lower level, then you're going to really personalize it towards a person. And then I could say one or two is also fine.
I mean, the topic is building social capital, right? And I think the focus on this very first part of the funnel is of course important, but at the end of the day, everybody does it. So let's say there is a new tool that like puts in the like first name and company, yeah? And then like 100 recruiters use it. And then there's something fresh and new, and then you have an email sequence, like tools that send emails one after the other, and then candidates are like, oh, well, you sent a follow-up. Okay, then I will answer. But then everyone on the planet uses those tools. So these kind of advantages will be competed away because the tools are accessible to everyone. This is the concept of software as a service, right? So that's why, like, I believe, and like we see it from very successful senior recruiters, they focus on everything which comes after the sourcing part, like the actual relationship building, the phone call. Like, I met so many like older recruiters, they don't even know like anything else but a phone, like an email maybe. And they are really successful. Some of them, like one person agencies that bill like $1 million a year, like Rich Rosen, for example. Like, they don't use any tools. Why? Because they get the recommendations from the people, from the candidates. So I think to stand out also as a personal brand, it's your leverage is in everything which comes after this cold approach. Yeah, you have the person on the call, you have the biggest influence at this moment, you can really like make like a memory in this person's head that they will never forget. And like, people maybe should like train this more than the other part.
I got a feeling no one's going to forget Ivan anytime soon, to be honest with you. You make a very good point, man. It is like recruiting is a job you get better at over time, right? Because your network builds, your credibility grows normally. You just end up becoming friends with a lot of people you interact with. And over time, that all of it kind of accretes so that you become a better recruiter. When you're starting, you're the worst recruiter. At the worst moment of your recruiting career is when you start. And it's the hardest moment. But you said something really interesting, Ivan, which is you should, when you do have the opportunity to do a one-to-one dialogue with a hard-to-hire person, you need to spend time there. Like, don't rush that. That's not something that you should like shoot through because you're busy, you got another call. No, you should actually have a lot of time set aside because that's a rare opportunity for you to build social capital.
Yeah, I would like to add also on the personal branding recruitment. So you probably know Enrique Heidelberg. So he's one of the recruiters. He can greet and say a couple of words in every language that the candidate he's interviewing, every literal language. So, and I think it's amazing. Candidates love it. And so he builds this from the very first call. And so I saw other things when the recruiters were standing out a little bit because they tried to make it more personal, more accustomed for the person they are dealing with. And this is going to bring us to the situation when candidates start trusting us and they remember us, I think, after we did something for them. For example, in my strategy on the networking with software engineers is to participate in their communities. I invite them to be speakers for the companies I work for, and ask them how they do even when I don't have a job. So I will be transparent. I do have reminders in my agenda to ask some of the people about how things are going. Because if I had a short conversation about future potential job and a future potential company, I will tell them, hey, let's catch up in 3 months. Let's catch up in 6 months. And in this moment when I'm talking to the person, I already make an invite in my agenda. Because you can hire people after a couple of years after you spoke with them. So, but yes, just try to stay connected through these social notifications. Oh, you've got a dog, you've got a kid, you've got a promotion, you've got something else. Just generally, not because you care to hire this person, because you're interested in this person.
Yeah, so a couple of things there. So you've got to have the CRM mentality, don't you? When you're putting those reminders in, Allah, you know, you spoke to this person, they're not ready to move, that's fine. You got to swallow your disappointment a little bit. You don't throw the person into the trash can. No, put a reminder in to have a conversation or an email with this person 3 months down the line. even if you decided to pre-schedule something, I think that's okay. Because you might forget at the moment, but it doesn't take a long time to just write a quick message immediately after and say, you know, and schedule it for 3 months.
Just for myself, at least for myself, yeah.
Yeah, and just say hello and make sure you budget time for that. Like one of the things in recruiting is that it's one of those jobs that, you know, you can spend all of your time on any aspect of the job, right? Whether it's over customizing emails or whether it's spending huge amounts of time sourcing, always one more candidate, whatever, but you need to budget time for relationship building. You know, if you have 100% of time, you need to stick 20-25% of that relationship building, not transactional in and out. It's building relationships with the community you care about. Okay. Moving on very quickly. Oh, by the way, folks, if you have any questions for our panel, please use the ask a question feature at the bottom of the screen. We're going to get to them in a moment. Okay, let's talk about sort of getting into those communities. There was someone who messaged me on LinkedIn and they were saying, oh, I'm very excited about this show, Hung. I want to learn about how to infiltrate these developer communities. And straight away, I was thinking, my friend, that's a wrong attitude. But I do get what you mean. But let's change the language and let's change the mindset, because you know you're not going to go in here under surreptitious circumstances per se. But let's talk about this. There are spaces where developers talk to other developers. They don't want necessarily to talk to recruiters in there. We know this, but how can we be present into those spaces in a non-intrusive way? Is there a technique to do that? Ivan, go to you first with this.
So like if you invest time, so it's like all about skin in the game and being involved and also like sacrificing your time. I've spent the majority of the first 3 years building my recruitment agency, spending in meetups and conferences, partly because at that time I was part-time still employed as a developer. So it was like a double whammy in a positive way. But if you go to conferences or like physical events, this will be not seen as like intrusive, because you're like really investing, you're like really investing time, right? About online communities, it's a bit harder because you can't go on like 40 Slack channels and like spam there, like, you know, like this is a bit then not okay, right? So there you have to like probably have some online strategy and read the stuff and comment on the stuff in a sensible way. So this is a bit harder, I would say, and maybe other people have a better idea how to do this with online communities.
No, quick summary then. Basically, in-person events, go and attend them, like spend some time and effort going to attend developer conferences, learn about the environment. It's actually quite interesting. It's a super interesting thing. So figure out what's going on in that industry, in that particular programming domain. And that is going to help you anyway in terms of your future conversations, but it might also enable you to have connections with people who turned up there. And you can imagine it also gives you material for future conversations, right? Like you can say, hey, did you go to this conference? Did you see that talk and stuff like this? That's great mileage, great credibility. Okay, go to you.
Maybe one small point. Like people underestimate this power. Like, you know, it's like basically like writing a book or writing software as a service product. Your relationships are similar. People don't understand this quite. So like, as you said, in the beginning, you are like nothing. Yeah, but then you have the relationships and then you really, you almost have like, you know, like capital, like the relationships, they are truly capital, you know, because people remember you and so on. And yeah, just wanted to add to this that I believe many, many people underestimate this, that this is so important.
Yep. Absolutely. Vim, let's go to you on the online side. Ivan was talking about the in-person show up, you know, commit, show that you're putting that energy in. But I think you've been particularly good in interacting with developers in online spaces where, you know, traditionally recruiters are not comfortable. Can you tell us a little bit about how you've done that and what your approach has been there?
First of all, be honest. Be honest to people that you are a recruiter. Like, don't try to hide it. On Reddit, for example, I even have a tag after my name in certain subreddits like, oh my God, it's an IT recruiter, run away now. Where I set that up with the moderators where I said, look, I want my tag to be that I'm an IT recruiter so people know that, oh, this guy is a recruiter. And be honest about it and always work from your expertise. If you see topics come up about salaries or new jobs or HR stuff, which is your expertise, you can go like, oh yeah, sure, I'm that IT recruiter guy. But don't push jobs. Don't push people into jobs and show that you are not like all the other recruiters that are spamming with job vacancies just go like, oh no, I'll help you from your expertise. And then like the next time they go like, oh yeah, it's Monday morning, my job sucks, I need to go somewhere else. They're going to think like, oh yeah, there was this one online recruiter which was like really helpful and he wasn't very pushy and he's in my neighborhood. I should send them a message like, hey, do you know anything? Can you help me with anything? So use the always leave a platform better than you found it. Don't just add your jobs on it and consider it a job well done. Like pay for advertising if you really want to do that. Or if you really want to post your jobs, post them in the communities where they're made for it. Like certain communities, online communities have discussion threads for specifically here you can post your jobs. But be better than the average recruiter and just be better than spamming your job out and helping people in this side of the community. And be honest, like you're a recruiter. You're not hiding undercover as a techie going like, oh, no, yes, I have years of experience in Java. Do you want to have a job, by the way? That's not going to work.
Yeah, I love it, Vim. So own it, you know, don't be ashamed of what we do. We actually do a very important job. And if we peel it all the acrimony away, the reality is we do, you know, move a lot of people to different opportunities and they could be really important sort of life-changing things for these folks. So absolutely own it. Don't be ashamed. The infiltration idea, that is the wrong mentality because you're coming in under subterfuge. Just go in there, speak to the mods if you have to and say, look, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to contribute. Developers have a lot of concerns about how they are treated by recruiters, how employers perceive their marketability, how they get assessed. It's a big issue. So here's where you can support. Here's where our insight is going to be valuable. And Vim, I agree, Adam, absolutely. The brilliant quote, the mental attitude is leave the community in a better state than it was before you leave it. If you come in there just dumping your jobs and then disappearing, who's that helping? You know, that's not helping anybody. Okay, go to you on this one, Ala. Thoughts on this? Online spaces, I think you've been actually good at creating some of these spaces, never mind just going into them. So there's another technique. Rather than going into a pre-existing space, you can actually create a space and invite people towards you. Can you share us a little bit about some of your work there, Ala?
Yeah, exactly. So I've tried joining and I understood that I really can't contribute that much only by bringing other people to join this community, so just to make it bigger. Then I decided, yeah, so creating own communities, engaging people to discuss the topics that they like, and I can facilitate, so I can actually use my skills the best, organizing, engaging, helping people to connect. So, and it works great. So right now in the Slack community that I'm organizing in Amsterdam, so I have more than 200 people, and these are the active members, people who are talking to each other, going to hackathons together. So actually, hackathons is also the places where I recommend companies to invest the time to put your team there, like help these people be the sponsor. So have this young, potential, great talents with some, you know, money or great mentors that they can learn from. Other things that I also found super helpful is to conduct surveys among developers, and I still owe some of the reports, but if someone is listening, I'm working on it, and then share. So developers would like to know where are the best jobs, where are the best companies, what are the salary range, and I surveying, like getting the information, sharing with them the benchmarks, they actually appreciate it. So, and if you join the community that you really like, you know, you feel you need, you want to post the job, reach out to admins, ask them if they're okay if you create a channel that you're going to moderate and you're only going to be put the relevant stuff and you promise to keep it nice and clean. So that's also one of the things you can do.
Great advice. I mean, every significant community of that identifies as a certain type do care about career progression and jobs. So, but oftentimes, you know, the moderators aren't going to be experts. Why don't you offer to moderate a subchannel to say, I'm going to deal with the job side of it. I'm going to help everyone in this community get better at their marketability, and I'm going to control that. And once you've got that sort of position, that's a really powerful position in terms of your ability to recruit those folks, or at least be the prominent person that they would go to if there's ever a need to do so. So super interesting. And by the way, surveys are a brilliant way to do something cold that can still add value. You're not sort of asking people to do too much. but you're already offering something in exchange for what they're offering, rather than say, come into my pipeline, we're going to do this. Okay, folks, we're moving really short on time, so I want to quickly touch on geographical difference and cultural differences. We're now living in a world where it looks like a lot of work is being shifted online, particularly software engineering. Actually, if you look at what software engineers are looking for, flexibility has always been very, very high as a priority. That may now be very difficult to negotiate away post-COVID. So we're suddenly, as recruiters, having to deal with engineers from different parts of the world. Without segueing into cultural stereotypes, but is there slight differences in terms of how we address engineers from different parts of the world, and do we adapt our game accordingly? Anybody? No idea. That's okay not to have an idea.
It's fine. I can take it. So I would say, not that much. Relevance will be relevant everywhere. So approach, personalization will be also relevant everywhere. Being nice, being kind, care about the person you're talking to. Maybe some things that you don't put in your reach out, that's something you will look into, and things you're not asking the person on your first call. I will be mindful a little bit, but that's probably will be international, worldwide approach.
I think that's there is a case where you can say there's an international engineering culture, isn't there? So even though there may be individual styles of communication that might be different, there's almost an additional community that engineers might identify with more so based, let's say, on the programming language they care about, or, you know, based on the sort of companies they prefer to work for and so forth. Okay, folks, we're coming to the end of this, so we need to just go quickly hit these questions. Let's go to these now. We're going to go with Angela Aleski. She's asked, okay, first contact email, what to write in your email subject line? So we're talking about a situation where it is first contact. There's no prior. You don't know this person. You need to establish contact. What are you putting in the subject line?
You put in something specific, so you get to the point in the subject line. You use the subject line really as the first sentence that you want to convey to the person, would be something that I would recommend. And then if it's not the first contact, if it's like part of an ongoing kind of demand generation program, which is something I didn't talk about today, but something that, if you're not familiar with the concept of demand generation, and look it up, because it's really important. It's a really important concept when it comes to nurturing and hiring tech people. But then the second thing I was going to add about that was, if they don't come back to you within like 48 hours, send them the same email with a different subject heading and see if that works instead. If it doesn't, maybe stop spamming and try different channels.
Yeah, so there's a follow-up mentality, which I think sometimes is required as well. And this is a very tough one, simply because you don't want to be overly persistent. But sometimes these things do get missed, of course. And sometimes people forget to respond immediately. And it's not necessarily unwelcome, even though you have to take the risk that sometimes it is going to be unwelcome and you might get some stuff back at you that is less than pleasant response. That, unfortunately, might be the name of the game. But anyway, email subject line, got to be specific. I'd also suggest sometimes adding the person's name in it is usually a good way to get an open, simply because it demonstrates that you've actually checked it out. And it's quite hard to do a mail merge with a kind of subject line in it. So it almost proves a little bit that, you know what, this person has is not a bulk messenger. Okay.
I would just add quickly. In gaming, sometimes you can hit the conversation. So you can say, hey, I think Warcraft is better than Starcraft, or I think this game is better. So you make people in the competing world curious to respond to you.
Yeah, I think so. So this is where domain knowledge comes into play, doesn't it? I think domain knowledge is really useful to use, but you've got to be like genuinely confident in what you're saying, because the domain can get really deep really quick, and you can indicate your lack of belonging by misusing some of these concepts. You've got to deeply know it. But there is the advantage of someone who's genuinely into it, you know, that will help those folks. Okay, Stefania said, okay, can we have a similar session And yes, we can certainly do a sales recruiting one, no problem. Let's go to this person called Innovex LLC. Man, I hate that. I mean, next time you sign up, please sign up with your real name. There's an example of what you should not do when you're Correct. Trying to build social capital, Correct. Right? You know, you don't use a company account. Anyway,
You see it on WhatsApp. When you're in WhatsApp groups and somebody's like contributing to the discussion and their name is like DC. I just reply, DC, what's your fucking name? Who are you?
Exactly. You've got to
pardon my language.
You've got to establish that. Anyway, let's answer the question. What is your most favorite way or place to build connections with your potential candidates or developers? I think we've kind of answered that, haven't we? It's like, although maybe we want to give it a shot. How would you answer the question as it is? I mean, where's your favorite place to build connections with software engineers? Is it Twitter? Is it GitHub? Is it wherever? What are your thoughts?
It's not one place. You got to try different things and see what works. Alice said it earlier, A-B test everything and really try and understand who's not in the market, who's in the market. Give them different messages in different channels. Segmenting the people you're trying to get communications to is really important. If you know somebody's not in the market and won't be for 6 months, don't send them jobs, etc. Quite a lot of different things about that.
And ask your current developers where they're spending their time. Like, that's one of the things that I always try to do when I get into a new company is ask your own employees, like, hey, where do you guys spend your free time? Like, where can I find you guys? Not to stalk you, but I want to stalk people like you, you know? And then from there, you can easily go and find new channels that you never know about. I have a really cool thing about this, like a way to build a connection with a potential candidate. If you're on a platform like Reddit or Discord or anywhere where people use nicknames, where you have no idea who they are, send your LinkedIn profile. Start the conversation with a candidate and go like, hey, I'm a recruiter. I could be a dog on the internet and you cannot know this. So this is my LinkedIn profile. You can check out my credentials there. Two reasons. First of all, you're showing trust in your candidate because you're going like, hey, this is an anonymous platform and I'm giving up my anonymity to tell you like, hey, this is who I am. And people are going to click that link. And when they click that link, they have to be logged into LinkedIn to see your profile. And from there, you can easily see like, oh, so-and-so, who's a Java developer from that place, has looked in your profile for the last 5 minutes. Well, there's a very big chance that so-and-so is the person on that platform.
That's really, really smart, Vim. Don't worry about that. That's not only very smart in terms of identifying the developer that you're interacting with who may be pseudo-anonymous in a different space, but you're conceding your privacy first. You're giving first. You're saying, listen, and LinkedIn is one of those wonderful things which, you know, it's very obvious what the URL is. You know, like, people recognize that's definitely a URL of a LinkedIn profile. It's safe to click. So the person is going to click it. They can't see it unless they're also logged in. And basically that action means both parties can see each other. And that's a classic way of deepening any relationship. If you're building relationships with people, show a bit of vulnerability, which is what that is, Vim, then suddenly that will be reciprocated with the candidate doing the other thing. Okay, final one to you, Ivan. How best place, our techniques to make connections with engineers. What are your thoughts?
I just want to say that I want to hear the airport story. To build, I would say phones on the phone. Like, it's like a million like locations where you can have the first, like, you know, get to know each other. But the really like super important part, which I missed in my first like years and years of my tech recruitment career, that I was like, no, every developer wants to write email, because I was like that. And then I noticed actually half of the developers, they also want to solve the situation quick. So they want to have a phone call. Half do not. Okay, right. But you can like educate them that actually on the phone, you can do like get better results. And if you like learn to talk on the phone with me, you will also be able to negotiate a better salary, which will also be on the phone. So this is like my contribution to this question.
The airport story will definitely be happening, but I want to introduce one more thing, because now that you've talked about the phone, we also have to talk about video. What is the developer attitude to things like Zoom? I know, for instance, our friend Mark Lundgren is very much a guy who records a video message and sends video messages through. I like that because he can demonstrate, he's put some effort in, he puts the person's name on it. So you can say Ivan with a piece of paper or something. Very obvious that is a custom message. You can't really fake that. So I think that really helps to do the open. But what are your thoughts on how developers respond to a synchronous message? Like, let's get on a Zoom. Is that something that a developer wants to do, or how would do we want that?
I think the weapon of like audio is stronger than the for some reason than video. I cannot explain it. It's maybe, I don't know, it's stronger for me. But yeah, asynchronous like involvement, like you prove that you like you involve time. That's always, you need some kind of proof of work, you know? So it can proof be a video or
yeah.
something.
I mean, proof of work. A key principle in marketing is the more choices you give somebody for how to interact with you, the more likely they will interact with you. So, you know, if you give somebody four options for what to do next or how to get the information from you, more people are going to get that information. It's as simple as that.
Yep. Cool. All right, Ala, let's hear about the airport.
Yeah, before the airport. So with the platforms, you have to be also careful, because I had a situation when engineers didn't want to have a call like in Zoom because of some privacies, etc. Something that the company is saying, and it's definitely, you know, given options, it's going to be a good idea always. Airport story. So I was in the airport telling the candidate about the job, you know, how exciting it is. So because my approach is the story, I want to tell the story about company, how I ended up and what the person is going to gain. So the person actually was so excited. So he got late for another meeting. So I actually almost I was late for my flight, but people around me in the gate, and I was like walking between gates. So two people came to me after that and said, hey, what are the job you sent? I really would like to know. So basically the guy on the phone was very excited. So he also signed up for it. They actually hired him. And two people in the airport like, okay, so tell me, what is the job? So you're definitely tech recruiter. Tell me. So that was a very good actually place and to be and to hire engineers.
That's a genius, also genius technique, like have a private conversation in a public place so that other developers can hear you pitch the company and then they can come in and volunteer themselves as further candidates. That sounds like a
genius.
You can
just pretend you're on a phone call actually and then like talk about
next level.
That's it. So you need to hang out at the airports where flights are always delayed and where there's ready connections to tech hotspots.
Why? I'll tell you what, pre-pandemic, that is totally something you could do. You could go to a WeWork or something and just have an animated conversation with your mate, pretend to hire this person, just make sure everyone's in earshot. You happen to be sitting next to someone you know is this person, and then, you know, have them volunteer forward when the time comes. Has anyone done that? That's a genius technique. All right, listen, that is it, folks. We are out of time, so thank you. Everybody for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you to our amazing panel. I think we definitely want to get you all back. This is a really interesting topic, community building. How do you build credibility? How do you talk to people? All of these things I think we could explore further. So it'd be wonderful to get you all back here. So let's say goodbye to our friends here. Vim, good to see you, sir. Hope you're well. We'll get you back. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. It was awesome.
And Ala, you have a good day. Great to see you. We'll speak to you soon, okay?
Thank you. Bye.
And Ivan, great to see you, sir. We'll get you back on the show, no doubt. What an interesting conversation. I really enjoyed that. Didn't we all enjoy that, folks? Let me know in the comments whether this is the type of show you want us to do. By the way, by bringing three people on, I'm always concerned that everyone might not get the chance to speak or whatever. I tend to speak more when there's three people. I don't know why. So let me know whether that's better or should we do like cycling people on and off. So you let me know which one you prefer. Anyway, Adam, I know you're late for time, so...
I just want to ask a quick question. I loved that show, by the way. I thought the guests were great, and hopefully everybody got some good stuff from it. But you know how, I think in recruitment, recruiters are the new software engineers, are they not? Like, it's harder to hire recruiters than anybody else right now. So
it's impossible.
I'm genuinely thinking I'm going to set up a rec-to-rec business with the sole purpose of placing rec-to-rec consultants
to rec-to-rec
businesses. Mate, how about that? That's meta, is it not?
That's like so. I don't think that's going to succeed, but I want you to do it. I really do want this to happen. It'll be a glorious failure. But to be honest with you, I've seen the same. I mean, obviously, you know, I post jobs for free on Who's Hiring on the various newsletters. That's overwhelming. It's taken over my day. It's like I can't do anymore. So I'm going to launch a job board. I've just been accepted by a company called Palette, who are doing like a job board thing. That's going to be one way in which I can help, I think. There's another idea I've got. Actually, check this out, Adam. I'm thinking, this is like for TV purposes. You might be interested in this. What if we interviewed a candidate and we charged employers to come and watch this crowdcast, and they had to then offer the candidate in a competitive type of method? So we can say, look, you're looking to hire a software recruiter. We know, you and I know loads of recruiters. Great. We're going to identify a recruiter that's actually looking for work. We're going to interview them for you, so you don't need to do anything else. So you can actually see on screen how this person behaves or whatever it is. And then on the day, you need to make the offer.
Wow, amazing. Yeah, like a proper like online, it's like QVC. Yeah.
QVC. That's right, reverse Shark Tank. Exactly that. It's like, I think it'll be good TV. I think it'll be quite funny. But at the same time, I wonder whether it might solve a few problems.
Yeah, Joe, I think Hung's talking about for recruiters rather than for software engineers, right?
No. This is purely eating our own, for sure. It's like, okay, you're a recruiter. You got to be up for having a conversation, right? So, all right, you're on here. The good thing for the recruiter is that person will get offers, right? So if you're on the market, you're looking for, you can't be asked with all of this, you know, interacting with people. Great. We're going to guarantee you some offers here. And if you're an employer, you're saying you can't hire anybody. Well, you know, here's a candidate. You can make an offer to them.
The thing is, you can't release the name of the interview subjects until, like, the interviewee, until it's the show. It's just got to be, you turn up to find out who it is, because otherwise people get poached before they turn up on the show. Yeah. And there's going to be loads of no-shows.
Yeah, we'll just have to.
It's not turning up. Is Sarah there? No, is John there? No, they've all been poached already.
That's a good point. But I reckon that's doable. I mean, ultimately, we can move faster than the market. We can literally set it up and say, boom, we're doing this. And then anybody who wants to come in, they can come in. But you need to offer this candidate. And to be honest with you, a lot of interviews are not necessarily about assessment of your capability per se. Like, how much can you actually assess during any sort of interview scenario? It's about your personality, your communication skills, how you interact, how you talk through your experience. We're able to interview people for that, you know, figure out who they are.
I think that the two areas that are going to get the most demand right now are, well, three actually, probably recruiters, people filling jobs, but recruitment ops and recruitment marketing people.
Right. We're doing it. That's happening. Well, I'll figure out a way this happens. I think it'll be good TV. The primary motivation is, I think it would be quite good TV. I think it'd be good to watch.
This is a YouTube thing, right?
Yeah. I don't know whether we do it on Crowdcast or not or whatever, but I think it needs to be done. All right, listen, that's about it. Let's move on. Have a good weekend, everybody. We're back next week, by the way. If you like this chat, follow the channel. We're going to be talking about remaking candidate experience post-pandemic. How do we need to change how we're operating now that we've got these elevated candidate expectations, and, you know, dropout rates increasing, engagement rates are going down? How do we redesign candidate experience, the candidate journey in this new world? Okay, we'll be back next week, folks. So we'll see you then. All right, Adam. Bye. See you later, man.